How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? I'm Fahey Flynn.
And I'm Chuck Shaden with Those Were the Days microphones behind the scenes at the Channel 7 Eyewitness News Program. We're here to collect our prize in the Chicago Today TV Trivia Contest. Fahey Flynn, as you know by now, our WLTD radio listeners joined together a few weeks ago to go for the big one in that TV Trivia Contest. And the big one we got, Fahey Flynn's bow tie.
It's an interesting specimen that you have, Chuck.
It's an authentic bow tie with
it's authentic.
Blue polka dots. And
I suppose about 20 years old and has been through four or five cleanings. But the thing about bow ties is that, you know, they don't wear out. You have to beat them to death.
Will you be tie-less tonight on the Flynn Daily News, or do you have a spare?
No, I have a spare. As a matter of fact, bow ties are becoming very difficult to come by. That is, polka dot bow ties. Uh-huh. There are some very flamboyant ones, such as those that Clement Stone wears, but I'm too young for those. But polka dot bow ties are difficult to come by because there's no money in making them.
And you don't use the clip-on type either. You
try this from
scratch,
no.
Right?
No, you wouldn't fish with worms, would you?
Absolutely. Well, so much for the bow tie and the TV trivia, and we thank you for providing the prize, which gave us a great incentive to have a lot of fun with the early days of TV.
Good.
You've been part of the Chicago scene for a long time. When did you first broadcast from our Windy City?
Well, I came to Chicago in June of 1941. Jim Conway and I came here at about the same time. And I was with CBS for 27 years, with the exception of some wartime experience. And then I moved to ABC, and I'm in my fifth year here. So if you add 27 and 5, that's too long, isn't it?
Well, it's not. I don't think it's too long for all of the people who've been listening and viewing your efforts. And you've been doing a good job. I understand back in 1948, as a newsman, you had produced a radio series called Report Uncensored.
That's right.
You won a few awards.
Ben Park and Ski Wolf, Perry Wolf, who is now a CBS documentary producer in New York, the man who did the Pentagon piece that got into all the difficulty. We were the trio, and at that time tape was so new that the only equipment we had were the brush tape machines with paper tape, and they were mahogany cases. And as a result, nobody really thought that you had an infernal machine with you. You could get in to interview people in places where they probably wouldn't let you go today because this equipment that you have, for example, is so professional. But those old brush recorders look just like nice old radios, you know, peaceful and so on. And we had some very good luck. We were the first ones to do interviews in depth on tape. Sometimes we talk to an inmate at St. Charles or one of the prisons for perhaps an hour and a half, and out of that we might salvage a minute or 30 seconds. And the series was quite successful. It was successful, in my estimation, for one reason, in that it got a response. In other words, we were able to get some action.
Mm-hmm.
We got a judge moved out of the juvenile court. We got a new man in as a superintendent of St. Charles. And it's the only program I've ever been involved in which had some specific accomplishments to its credit. And then when the awards came up at the end of the year, we were lucky and we had what is called, I guess, a grand slam. We got them all that year. Peabody, DuPont, Ohio State. There were seven all told, and it was quite a year. Always look back to it, but it's so doggone long ago. How do you remember it?
Oh, I
somebody told you about it.
I have the ability to read men's minds or something. What about another series that you did? I think it was probably an early series on race relations. It was called The Quiet Answer.
That's right. That was another one that Perry Wolf and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a pioneering effort, really, because the Supreme Court hadn't issued its decision, its landmark decision at that time, on restrictive covenants.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, the whole impact was basically on housing, on blacks moving from the areas where they were more or less rigidly confined by restrictive covenants and real estate practices into adjacent areas and so on. And so, as I say, it was really a pioneering effort and interesting to do.
The question I must ask of anybody who has done any kind of radio work or even TV work is, do you have copies of these programs that you produced, these two series, for example, in your possession?
No, I don't really. I wish I had. But as you probably know, recording was pretty primitive until quite recently, as a matter of fact. This sophisticated equipment that we're using now for audio and video recording is only about 10 years old. And I do have a couple of copies that I got in an interesting way. You might be interested in this. I had a call from a young man who said that he had some recordings of me and of Conway, and he wondered whether or not I'd be interested in having them. And I said, sure, yeah, what are they? Well, he said that this program that you did on, this was on a drug addiction, I've forgotten them. The Untouchables was the name of that series. And I said, gosh, yes, I'd like to have them. Well, he said, I'd like to get, you know, a little money out of them. How much? Well, he said, $5. And I said, come ahead, bring the recordings. So he did, and he showed up with two of these great big 16-inch platters with small cuts on them of about a minute and a half, 3 minutes or so on. And I said, how did you happen to have these? Well, he said, it's an interesting story. My father's in the junk business, and CBS was going to sell off a lot of... they had a huge storehouse filled with these aluminum platters of programs that they were keeping for some reason, I don't know. And they decided to sell them for junk. And this young man saw this stuff coming in and looked them over and recognized some of the names of people who were still in the business and called them and said he had a pretty good summer.
Well, you know, it's amazing. Like yourself, you're in the business of producing material for radio, but you're not really in the business of preserving that stuff. You're working today for tomorrow, and
Well, it was difficult to preserve. I have a lot of tapes of things that I've done in recent years. I have some kinescopes and things of that sort. But so many of the things that I would like to have on tape or on records just don't have.
I want to ask you a bit about the Chicago radio scene back in the early 40s when you first became involved in the city. Radio then was... 30-minute programs, mostly, you know, back-to-back, 6:30, 7, 7:38, and so forth. When did the news come in? On radio today, we get news every half hour, just about, or even more often than that. Did you produce or were you involved with the presentation of news, let's say, for a half an hour at a crack, or when did the news come in?
No, news really came into its own on December 7th of 1941. When I came to CBS, for example, in 1941, our news department consisted of two people and a guy who could run fast, who used to go out and get the copies of the papers from the newsstands. That's when we used to put out multiple editions, you know, and the hours and so on. And I won't say that we stole news from the newspapers, but we did borrow some of their items. And there was a morning newscast at 7:15, and there was an evening newscast at, I believe, 10:30. A chap named Todd Hunter used to do it, and then Lowell Thomas had one on the network, and that was about it. And when December 7th broke, this brought us into the news business in a hurry, and we were desperately hiring people from newspapers and so on, and smaller towns, and within about 6 months' time, we had a sizable department of 20 or 30 people, and our news output had expanded to, well, we used to do, our news used to begin, when I left to go into the Navy in 1943, our news began at 4:30 and ran solidly until 7 o'clock with various 15-minute segments. Lowell Thomas from New York, for example, a chap named Harlan Eugene Reed, who used to be a commentator here, and I used to do one, and John Harrington would do one, and Edwin C. Hill would cut in from the network, and so on. And because there was this tremendous personal interest that so many people had in what was happening in the war in Europe, there were so many Americans involved that people just wanted to get every ounce of information they possibly could. So news was very, very big, and it stayed that way during the war, and it never really tapered off completely when the war ended, and it's been a very saleable commodity mm-hmm. and a very important commodity in broadcasting ever since.
And today, of course, news is the backbone of radio broadcasting throughout the day, mm-hmm. every day, just mm-hmm. about. Mm-hmm. And indeed, there is a WBBM today is an all-news station.
That's right.
I remember haunting WBBM when it used to be called the WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.
That's right.
And we'd go over there, and there were a lot of nice people over there. Used to let us kids come in, and they'd give us teletype sheets, you know, off
yes,
of there, and the
sure.
scripts, and we'd meet fellas like George Watson, who used to be on
yes.
the Gold Coast
yes,
show.
Yes,
and,
yes. Dear friend of mine.
A lot of the, Paul Gibson was over at BBM.
And yes.
Julian Bentley was at WLS, wasn't he? He was a big newsman from
the
Midwest.
He moved from WLS to WBBM, I believe, in about 1948 or 9, after the war.
Mm-hmm.
And stayed there for a good while until we went into television. He was our first television news director and died when he was much too young.
Mm-hmm. When was your first TV newscast?
In 1953, CBS bought one of the stations which ABC Paramount, or actually Balaban and Katz, owned.
Mm-hmm.
Through a merger, they wound up with two television stations and had to dispose of one. And they disposed of Channel 4 to CBS in 1943, in the spring of the year. And I said 43, I meant 53.
Mm, 53,
and I think they sold it for $6 million, and we all sort of thought, gee, I think the boss was taken on that one, you know. And interestingly enough, it was in this building,
uh-huh.
The same studios.
State Lake Building.
That uh-huh. Channel 7 is now using were then the studios of CBS for 2 or 3 years. Matter of fact, we still say that we're the only wood-burning television station still on the air. But there's a lot of television history in this building.
Uh-huh.
This is where Captain Eddie, who was the television pioneer in the Chicago area, used to have his headquarters. And during World War II, it was used as a training center for radar people. And the Zenith station used to broadcast mm-hmm. from here. And at the height of the war, when manpower was scarce, the television operation proper was handled by women. All our camera people, I shouldn't say ours, but all the camera people were women. The directors mm-hmm. were women. And there was a woman manager, a woman named Kit Carson, used to manage the whole operation. Mm-hmm. But in 1953, CBS moved in, and we were all invited to audition to see whether we had any possible abilities to transfer mm-hmm. to the new trick, and I guess this is wood, I'll knock on it. I was lucky, and been at it ever since. Still love radio.
Well, that's good to hear. You do any radio today?
No longer. I did a 5-minute piece on mm-hmm. ABC Radio for a while, but they practically eliminated their bureau in Chicago, with the exception of Paul Harvey's origination.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't originate here too often because he travels. So, but we used to have on ABC a rather sizable operation.
Mm-hmm.
But just came back from a trip to London and listened to a lot of radio there on BBC, and they still do it the way we used to do it. They have dramatic shows, they have comedy shows, they have live music, and it's kind of refreshing, really.
Mm-hmm. Why can't we do that today? Why can't we have original, contemporary things in drama and comedy on radio?
I wish I could tell you, but I just don't know the answer. I think that we might have been able to salvage something, you
uh-huh.
know, but I think that we've gone beyond the point of no return now. I think that we're going to run radio pretty much as it is now. Although Mickelson seems to be able to sell the Green Hornet and things of that
yeah,
sort.
Yeah, it happens here and there. And, of course, we enjoy a lot of the old radio programs too, and so maybe we can if not bring it back, at least keep it going a little bit. Fahey Flynn, thank you very much for sharing some memories with us today and for providing us with the big important prize in the Chicago Today TV Trivia Contest. And I assure you, it's nothing trivial at all to have your famous bow tie.
Hope it fits.
It fits. Thanks for sharing some memories.
My pleasure.